If you want to get your favorite technical news, give the Gizmo Gang a call. Gizmo Sapiens.
Hey, and welcome to Gizmo Sapiens Show 196, Slay Ride. I'm Chris, and with me today is...
I am Matt.
And we're going to talk about vehicles. So, Tesla just released the new Model Y. And...
Why? Why not?
Exactly. And what's funny is, so it was reviewed by CNET's Roadshow, and they did a... It's kind of interesting concept what they did. They actually did a two-year lease on the vehicle so that they're going to continuously review it over a two-year period to so it's not just the, hey, it's a new vehicle, it's great, you know, how does it last, what do we like, what we don't like. But in their initial review, it is, they said it was a good combination of range, performance, and functionality, but it should never have gone to market in its current form.
Really?
And the reason they say it is, they say that the active safety features are dangerous on the Model Y. And what it is a couple things. One, the, you know, Teslas use a large 15-inch touchscreen in the center of the console up in the dash for all the gauges. So they say that, you know, to drive the Model Y, which is an SUV crossover vehicle, you have to take your eyes off the road to read the gauges. So, I mean, that's a safety issue.
As opposed to their current location in the dashboard.
Behind the steering wheel. Now, my Toyota Yaris, which is in 2011.
Short of having a heads-up display, you're taking your eyes off the
road anywhere. I agree with that. But the other one that they said was much more dangerous is that, so all these new vehicles... have an active braking system so that they do two things. One, if you take your foot off of the accelerator, the car automatically starts to apply the brakes, which combustion vehicles don't do at all. But two, if the sensors in the car think you're going to collide with something, it automatically brakes the car for you. So the reviewer from CNET's Roadshow said that on an hourly basis, the system would get confused and apply the brakes. And they said that this is not an issue unique to Tesla, that almost all these companies are working through these issues. But it was happening, like, he got it on camera like 15 times in an hour. So, and they said one of the issues with it is that in both, the Tesla Model 3 and the Tesla Model Y, which are their lower end, more consumer friendly cars,
They
removed the radar or LiDAR, which contributes to how that system works. And that removal, because they're relying just on visual cameras, which don't have good depth perception, was causing this. They're theorizing that's the issue. That's what's causing it to automatically brake all the time. And they're saying it's not like when you're moving at slow speeds and you're within traffic. They're saying you could be on the highway with nobody else on the road at 55 miles an hour and it gets confused and it throws the brakes on. And he said two times the emergency braking chime came on because it threw the brakes on that hard.
Wow.
So, now... Is it to go back to Dr. Sean's argument all the time, you know, Tesla's not a car company, Tesla's a technology company. And so how are they going to treat it? In a car company, you'd have a recall, and it would go back for the NTSB to review. Technology company, do we do an iterative software update, and we tweak the tolerances down until we get something that works in an acceptable manner? Because that's kind of what happens. Like, storage arrays are a good example, particularly older storage arrays with spinning disks, is that when the disks were brand new and you installed it, when the product first came out, like a new storage array, the firmware tolerance for when a drive was out of tolerance was much tighter than it was. They would reduce that over time as the drives age, so that drives that were still fully functional wouldn't error out. you know, are we going to go with that kind of thing? That brings up a good question on how do we treat this technology that has to meet national safety standards?
Well, are they a car company or are they a technology company?
Yeah.
Because at some point, a decision is going to have to be made. Are these cars safe to be on the roads with other cars or not?
Not, exactly. You can't have a car throwing on its brakes all the time.
And that's not Tesla's decision to make.
No, it is not. So in a related story, in California, a kid, a 16-year-old kid goes to take his driver's test.
I was wondering if you had seen this.
Yeah, and he's driving in a Tesla Model 3.
Yep.
And again, it uses regenerative braking, so when he took his foot off the gas pedal to stop, the car automatically starts to brake. And so during his driver's test, he failed, the driving instructor failed, or driving tester failed him, because he was not sufficiently showing her that, you know, he was putting his foot on the brake and that he was letting the car brake by itself. Well, the father took the results and he emailed the supervisor of the supervisor of the state of the driving group in California, or the BMV in California, and complained. And so they sent him an email back saying that, oh, based upon what we know, we're going to, you know, your son will receive his driver's license and we've marked his test to pass. But the reason it was because of that is because the way the Tesla 3 works, that regenerative braking works, there's no way as a driver his kid could have stopped that outcome. And it's kind of funny because the kid asked, well, okay, so what do I need to do, work on next time? And the test taker for the BMW said, don't bring a Tesla. So, quality feedback there.
Well, in which case, why isn't the state of California saying that a Tesla is not a vehicle that should be driven on our highways?
Well, that's why they reversed the test, is because the state of California is pushing for these electric vehicles,
yeah.
Even though Tesla's no longer a California company, they've officially moved to Texas.
Right.
And, but, you know, it's kind of funny to see the bureaucracy. The governor and the state has moving in one direction, and the bureaucracy of the state is moving in another. So, you know, it was a good view of the lower end of the third estate.
Indeed.
But again, that's one of those things that we have to worry about with electric vehicles, and it kind of goes back to the Model
now,
Y.
Is that an electric vehicle problem, or is that a braking technology problem?
So the regenerative.
I've seen that sort of technology in other vehicles.
Other vehicles too.
Well, that's one of that exactly.
And he had asked before the test, from the driving instructor, should I turn this off? And she said no.
Then she at the end says, come back with some other vehicle.
Vehicle, yeah.
Well, that's an idiot instructor.
Exactly. Again, third estate versus common sense. But it does bring up some good points in relation to Model Y. You know, regenerative braking makes a lot of sense because it's another way to capture energy and charge the batteries in the car, which then elongates, keeps you from having to go to the... And I don't know how effective the regenerative braking is on a Tesla Model 3. I couldn't find any numbers to say that, hey, if you're using regenerative braking, you actually get 10% more battery charge or 10% more miles out of a charge because regenerative braking is slowly topping off the thing. If it's 1% or 2%, I don't know that there's a lot of value there. Now, maybe over time, but then again, maybe not. Hybrids have done regenerative braking for a long time. The first Priuses had regenerative braking to help keep that battery charged when it was not, you know, running on batteries. So regenerative braking, in my opinion, is something that is going to be default technology as we move into this electric age and hybrid age of vehicles.
I generally oppose, if our cars are going to drive us, then our cars should drive us. But if we're going to drive the cars, we need to drive the cars.
Correct. We shouldn't be fighting with the technology.
I struggle with that. And then to hear technology leaders say, "Well, this is going to be the way it's going to be." I beg to differ.
The thing is all of this had to pass through the NTSB, and it was okayed by them.
But that's because they have pressure from administration sources saying we have to have XYZ technology by 2035, which is unrealistic to begin with.
Yeah, I agree.
But it's no longer about national transportation safety. Now it's about mandates from above that have nothing to do with safety, but in order to get this mandate fulfilled, we have to get this technology approved.
Yeah.
So safety now.
Well, it's a catch 22.
But
it is.
That's the way government works.
It is the way government works. Well, enough on that. Now, as much as I opposed the infrastructure bill that got passed, there was one technological highlight, at least the one I found out of it, and that is, adapted headlights are finally legal in the U.S. They were part of that infrastructure bill.
Now, describe for me what this technology is.
So, current headlights, including current LED headlights, which a lot of LED headlights are illegal in the United States, because I guess the NTSB through administrative pressure or through testing or whatever has said that a headlight on a vehicle can only have so many lumens. And a lot of the LED headlights have greater luminances. Now, that being said, LED headlights, even aftermarket LED headlights, are pervasive in the United States today.
I get my retinas burned out every time I drive
yeah.
at night.
So what? One of the things that adaptive headlights, or they're also known as digital matrix LED headlights, do is that there's a sensor in them. And as an oncoming car approaches, so your headlights are on bright all the time with an adaptive headlight. So you have the greatest field of view. They have sensors in them to determine if there's obstacles in the way or an oncoming vehicle. And they don't dim the headlights like you would today where you turn them, you know, manually turn them on and off. They turn off arrays or parts of the LED, you know, a number of the LEDs in the LED array that would affect a driver or hit the glaring area. Because, you know, a brighter, brights in your headlights tend to focus the secondary bulb in your headlight into a higher plane, and so it shines directly into an opposing driver's eyes. So what an LED adaptive headlight would do is it would turn off those arrays that would shine up into an opposing driver's eyes. In addition to that, LED headlights can also display patterns on the road, so it makes it easier in the dark to understand where the edge lines on the road are, where the center lines on the road, and those are only visible to the person driving that vehicle. And it does that because it's an array of LEDs, and it can, with the sensors, it can detect like and see things like, in particular, like if it's rainy at night, it can pick up where the stripes are in the road, because sometimes glare from, you know, the
yeah.
lights and whatever make it almost impossible to see where the lines are on a wet road. Well, the sensors can pick that up because they can distinguish the glare, because one, it's going to be able to see, and the sensors can see in different wavelengths, and then it can shine a pattern of light on those to make them more visible to the driver. So it's actually,
I think that's great.
Well, it's a, in my opinion, it is a much better or much more useful application of technology in motor vehicles than regenerative braking is, particularly on a non-electric vehicle.
Agreed. My thing is we have to tone down these lights that are killing me.
Well, and that's what it's supposed to do.
If it works, then great. But if it makes the problem even worse, then I'm out. Because it's hard to drive at night as it is.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, some of these guys will pass you on a two-lane road, and I'm like, for a couple seconds, I can't see a thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, also, I think, so some car companies like Audi have already implemented, they're the ones who actually call theirs the digital matrix LED headlights, have already implemented the technology in their cars. It's just they couldn't sell it in the United States until now. But there are third-party solutions coming, aftermarket headlights that work on older vehicles, because the LED headlights do make it much easier to see. I have a vehicle that has LED headlights in it, and I have another vehicle that does not. It still has incandescent headlights. And the difference in the amount of road I can see at night in any weather condition is incredible.
I'll go one step further. With my headlights, it doesn't look like they're on at all now, because in comparison to everyone else's headlights, I literally have to roll up on somebody to make sure that they're even on.
Yeah, to see the reflection in the back of their car.
That's how bad it is.
Yeah. Well, LED headlights also overcome other things that happen with headlights, because, you know, the light is in an enclosure, and over time those enclosures become scratched, and, you know, and there's all these medicine snake oil solutions, you know, put this on it, rub it in, and it might fix it for a little while, but, you know, it makes the enclosure clear again, or not yellow. But, you know, they're plastic. They yellow over time, they degrade in the sunlight. Yeah. You know, there's all kinds of things. They get scratched, and so that causes the light to either diffuse more or diffuse in ways that are not optimal. And LED headlights overcome that largely. I mean, not the adaptive ones, but just aftermarket LED headlights overcome that because they are so much brighter. So that, you know, even though that same diffusion is going on, there's so much more light that they see. But LED headlights have been, you know, installed in new cars for quite a while because they last longer. I mean, there's aftermarket LEDs for everything, from your signal markers to your running lights to your, even inside the dash. In my, one of my pickup trucks, the lights behind the console, you know, where the heat and cooling controls are,
yeah,
went out, and I had to change a switch out in there. So when I did it, I was going to put new lights in, and I bought LEDs to go in there. And, you know, those LEDs will last longer than that truck will last now. And so, you know, and they're more power efficient. But I have definitely encountered it, like, particularly on the highway. Like, if you're on a two-lane highway or a four-lane highway that's not divided,
yes,
and somebody is on the opposing coming on, yeah, with LED headlights, you're kind of blinded there for a second.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So that's what this technology is supposed to do. And what I think is funny about it is, why would this be illegal, but yet LED headlights in the United States have been legal forever? Again, it's another one of those things where the third estate got involved, and it...
And shouldn't have, because they have no concept of,
well,
what's actually happening.
Exactly, because what they're doing is they're enforcing something that's on paper without being intelligent about it. So last but not least, cool car technology that's happening, and as far as relation to electric technology, is that Ford Motor Company and Purdue University in Indiana, just a few hundred miles to our west, not even a few hundred, just a couple hundred miles to our west, developed a new charging cable for electric vehicle chargers. And what it does is that it can, this cable allows vehicles to charge in about the same time it takes to fill a gas tank, which the rough estimate is 5 minutes. And the reason is because today the fastest you can charge with a supercharger is about 40 minutes to 80%. But what happens is the more current you put through that cable, the more heat is generated, because you're losing, through resistance, you're losing energy to heat. And more heat means it'll overheat, it'll cause the batteries to ignite, all kinds of things. So they created a new cable that uses a liquid vapor cooling system.
Okay.
That, because vapor, the liquid vapor can diffuse heat much more readily than even liquid.
Yeah.
And it cools that cable, so it allows them to send a lot more current and charge the vehicle, in this case, from, you know, down from 40 minutes, so 8 times faster than they're currently doing it. And part of it, it's not something that I don't think we'll see in 2022, but we might see it in 2020, late end of 2023, 2024. But it's needed so that these newer superchargers and faster chargers and new battery technologies that are rolling out in these future electric vehicles can be charged in a much more quick manner. Because that's also one of the criticisms of electric vehicles is, where do you go, you know, which gas station do you go to where it takes 40 minutes to fill your car to 80%? You know, if it takes 5 minutes to fill your car to 80%, that's probably livable. Yeah, well, and that's where we are in the electric market today, you know. So I don't know if there's been there's a lot of research that's gone on in the electric market, a lot of it regarding price per kilowatt versus price per gallon, and, you know, which then they have to equate on how many miles do you get out of a kilowatt versus a gallon. And that probably also, just like in cars, you know, some cars get 12 miles to the gallon and some cars get 37 miles to the gallon, you know, so you're depending on the situation, it's going to vary. But I don't think there's been a lot of studies done on the cost and time, and or how many people who have electric vehicles have an electric vehicle where they putz to and from work or putz around town in. And then when they actually have to go on a trip or go anywhere that's, you know, greater than 50 miles or whatever, they have, you know, a big gasoline vehicle today. It would be good to see those numbers to understand, because that's understanding the use case.
That's why this whole idea of government mandating that we're going to be all electric by 2035 is dumb to begin with.
Absolutely.
We have no idea what our needs actually are.
Well, and the other thing I would like to understand is, so, you know, they give a lot of numbers about number of electric cars sold is, you know, every year is getting greater, but they never tell you, okay, that, yeah, great, that grew by 25%, but what is that in comparison to all the new gasoline cars that are still being sold? What are those numbers in comparison to the total number of vehicles and their types that are out there in the United States today? Because even by 2035, the oil industry is still going to be selling gasoline and diesel, because there's going to be a ton of vehicles, because you can't afford to just, particularly if it's like a specialty vehicle. Like I own a Ford F-350. It is a farm vehicle. We use it to tow all of our big livestock trailers, and we use it to tow, you know, the car hauler and and, you know, things like that, that where we're moving farm machinery around and, you know, and mine is not new by any means. It's 13 years old, but even today I'm still getting offers from people going, cause it's in good shape. You sell that to me for, I'll give you $15,000 for that. Why? Because you can't even start with a base model F-350 or Chevy 3500 or Dodge 3500 for less than 60 grand. You go electric on one of those and you're double that amount of money. And your mileage is, or the value of that vehicle is probably not going to be as great because it won't be able to tow as far or tow as long or whatever. It might have great torque on the low end because electric motors have great torque. But, you know, there's none of this use case capability that be done. I'm waiting, you know, Tesla created the electric semis, and my understanding was that both Target Corporation and Walmart both had orders for them. But with the supply chain, because that was all starting when coronavirus hit,
Yeah. And
the supply chain issues we've had in 2021, how many of those vehicles were built, how many of them were delivered, and how many are in operation? You know, because my understanding is Walmart was buying 200-300. And even then, Tesla was saying, look, this is not a long-haul truck. This is a tractor for a tractor trailer for doing no more than 500 miles round trip. Not driving a truck from New York to California and delivering product, you know? And so I want to understand those numbers.
But until there is a vehicle that can do that,
you're going to be using diesel vehicles. You're going to be using diesel trains. You're going to be using diesel barges on the rivers. Because the cheapest way to ship something, and everybody does not know this, is not, semi-trucks are actually very expensive. There's not much difference between shipping something on a semi and shipping it via air right now.
Yeah.
The cheapest way to move material is to move it via barge down the Ohio and the Mississippi rivers. The problem is once you get to the end of the Ohio River, unless you go north or south, there's no big river that goes west through the United States to help deliver material.
Yeah.
And so that's why we have a large trucking industry and...
Freight rail,
yeah. But even freight rail costs more than moving it by barge.
Well, yeah, and that's because the mode of transportation is a natural resource with a barge, whereas now you're having to burn
yeah.
a fuel.
Well, I mean, even the barges, you have to push them up and down the river with fuel, but...
Not near as much.
But you don't have the infrastructure required because it's a natural resource.
Exactly.
You know, I don't have to do river maintenance.
Well,
they do.
You do. But
it's not like, you know, we broke a track or this rail has, over time, geological movement has moved this rail and so it's a danger of causing a derailment and we have to fix this or,
Yeah. You
know.
I think, again, that's another one of those things where what's the point behind the mandate?
Yeah.
Is it to cause trouble for you and me, or is it to actually solve a problem? If it's to solve a problem, we're not solving it.
I would concur. So, I think we'll stop right there. Please send us your feedback. Let us know what you think to gizmosapiens@gmail.com or visit our website at www.gizmosapiens.com. And we'll see you on the digital flip side.
You've been listening to Gizmo Sapiens, a technology and entertainment podcast. You can reach us at our email address at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you, and we'll see you next week from the digital flip side.